Session number 17626, Mr. Thomas Lawton, reel 14.
Mr. Lawton, reel 14. Was it easy to keep discipline in the camp?
I would say yes. Although the men were from all regiments and everything, they still had that little sense. Even militiamen even had that sense of being military men. And as we used to say, look, stand up and speak out and be upright. See? When you're saying anything, say it definitely. And don't be afraid to salute. Every German salutes everything. So if you see what you think is German, salute him, and he'll give you one back. But he'll probably complain if you don't salute, because you recognize his rank, you should salute. Right? The men, you got them, take a man like Half a Cheese. Half a Cheese was a Suffolk man. He was a sergeant in the Suffolk regiment. He wasn't a nice looking fella. He was a tall, thin lad and always looked gaunt and kind of dirty. But on one occasion, we got an issue of cheese. Just a little bit cheese. And he said, well, half a cheese is better than nought. So forever after that, he was half a cheese. See? The dolmetscher, the English dolmetscher, he had been taught at school. He was a dedicated lad.
Dolmetschers are what?
Eh?
What's a dolmetscher?
Aye. Englishman.
That's German, is it? It's a German word.
Dolmetscher means interpreter. But this lad spoke German. And when I got to know he spoke German, called him Swan. And he was an educated lad. I believe they're not washing too much or anything like that, see? And we should say, why don't you get yourself cleaned up a bit, man? But I'm all right. Even wore his clogs awkward. And when I learned that he spoke German, I said, well, do you speak German? Well, he said, I went to university, and he said, I've spent some holidays in Germany. Well, I said, why didn't you say so? I needed an interpreter. So you could be my interpreter. But whenever I sell you anything, you repeat it to the German, neutral. He'll know by my expressions what I'm saying and what I mean. You will explain the word, the language. So Swan was always with me, and I used to dig him up somewhere if I had any problem with the Germans, because Bill, Chicago Bill, you see, was only there on special occasions. So I was the man in charge of the camp. I had my interpreter. And I also had Sergeant Jack Tingle. That's before I, Sergeant Jack Tingle, 2nd Battalion man of the Durhams, who came back as a reservist, and he was a sergeant of my company even when we were Durham. And Jack turned up in that camp. He's a good lad, a good... Jack Tingle was a good athlete, a good footballer, and although we had no much, the lads did try to do a little bit sports here and there. But Jack was also a soldier. He'd been in the 2nd Durhams as a regular man, and he was discharged. He wasn't discharged, he was on reserve. And he'd come back in the army, and he was my sergeant. And I made him my policeman. So I introduced a policeman to camp. Oh. And there was another chap who was a detective in the Metropolitan Division who seemed to be interested in the fact that he thought somebody was stealing potatoes that should have been belonged to the men. And when he came to me about it, I says, "What? Why do you say that?" He said, "Because I've seen some of them eating chips at night time." Well, I says, are there not men that's working in the cook, like, doing the cooking? Yes, well, I says, they've got a right to. I says, they're doing the job and I'm only 30, why not have a few ships? Oh, but I said, I'll tell you what, if ever I want anything investigating, I'll use you. Yes, you do. And he says, by the way, Sam Major, after the war, you know, if ever you come to London, I'll show you around the Black Museum. So I had a sergeant, policeman. I had this chap, he was only a private, but from the Metropolitan Detectives. And I had Swanee as my interpreter. So everything that happened, it was thrashed out with these four men. But I was the kingpin. I was the Vertrauen's man, or lager speaker. Man of confidence. So if there's anything happened, I had to go to the commandant. Fortunately, in Sommerlager, we had never reached the standard of where we knew all this. We're just feeling our way, and the Germans didn't do anything other than verboten. And everything you wanted was verboten. Where we would say, no, you're not allowed that. They didn't. They said, that's forbidden. Eh? That was the difference. Where we would have said, no, you're not allowed that. They would say, verboten. Forbidden. And everything that you wanted was forbidden.
The spirit of the men must have been pretty low.
Oh.
After the long walk. Was that affecting the way things were going?
Demoralized.
How did you build that up?
Well, you build it up by trying to be disciplined. And how could you discipline a lot of men that's been on the roads for weeks? You know, lousy, dirty, never had a bath, hungry. How could you discipline? Well, you more or less talk to them and tell them, hey, hold on. Remember, I am the same as you. I've been on the bloody roads the same as you. And don't think because you're a prisoner of war, you know, that you're entitled to a lot of sympathy. Because remember, in the old country, you're known as useless mouths. Oh, I'd flatten them. What do you mean by useless mouths? You're being kept. But you don't get kept for nothing. The Germans aren't feeding you for nothing. The British government is paying these people to feed you. And they're not. But nevertheless, the British government is paying, and the people of England are paying, Britain are paying for your keep. Yes, you're entitled to a bit of sympathy, but don't look at it. Remember, anything that you've gone through, I've gone through. And I consider that I'm a soldier. And I'll treat myself like a soldier as long as I can. Even though I'm wearing wooden clogs and raggy breeches, I'll still be a soldier. And I think that was the way that you had to talk with them. You couldn't go and order them to do a thing, because they'd just like to tell you to beat it. Eh? Especially when you got little clusters. And of course, like everywhere, the men got into clusters. Like goes to like. So if there was a button, he would have a lot of buttons with him. But there was one thing definite, and I proved it. Physical force beats all your discipline. And I was fortunate that way. I was a strong bloke. I'd boxed for the division and so forth. And I remember at another camp many years later, a Scotsman said to me, do you know, somebody said, the nastiest looking man I ever saw was you. When? When we were in the Sommerlager. I said, you were in Sommerlager? Aye. He says, that there were three or four of us, and we said, ooh, look at that man. He says, you had a red beard. I said, I had a red tash. You had a red beard, and your face was nasty. And I said, he says, the nastiest man I ever saw was you. So my physical appearance wasn't encouraging. But when I spoke to the men, I used to tell them, and don't forget, you know, at the last, there's always this.
Your fist.
Yes. If necessary, physical force. If you're not do a thing, when you're asked to do it, you're not ordered to do it, you're not do it, then, of course, you'll not be given an order to do it, as you would the army. but I'll use force if necessary, and I've got a sergeant that can use his hands, right? Consequently, we were respected, maybe in the wrong way, but we knew, after all, we'd been with these men, we knew the men, we knew what the conditions were. Some of them thought that they should be getting this up and that, so you can't get what isn't available. In time, with a bit luck, it'll come. If we are unfortunate enough to be prisoners of war long enough, we'll get the better of it and we'll grow up above it. Do your best now. But you had to be sorry for some of them, because they hadn't been in the army. They were just militia men. They hadn't done anything. And the experiences in France that they had definitely changed their opinion about the British army and the British government. They had nothing.
Were the Germans informing you of what they were winning at that time, what they were taking, fall of France and so on?
Oh, yes.
So that must have demoralized you as well.
You see, take that camp, Shubin. The commandant there had long speakers straight around the camp. Everything had happened. And the fall of France, oh, he had all out. And that's what happens to England. I mean, the next news you'll get will be the fall of England. Right? As far as we were concerned, it could be. We hadn't seen anything to encourage us. We'd seen the power of the German army. And we'd seen how they swept through everything. And we compared them with our leaders, their efficiency compared with the inefficiency of our side. And one of the biggest worries we had was, I wonder if they're there yet. Wondered if they were in our backyard, in our back street. But the Germans, every chance they got, they thumped you with that. And on the roads, if you took it down to a place for some reason, there'd be big maps showing you the German advances anywhere and everywhere. And the time came when those maps vanished. And we knew the Germans were on the run. But in the beginning, we were green. The Germans were green. And they just couldn't understand the Britisher as compared with the Frenchmen. But you see, we didn't either until we realised, but the French, their homes are occupied. Their people are hostages. Anything they do wrong, their families suffer for it. We were different. And that was one thing I used to use often with the Germans. when the German commandant sometime, I went to see him about something, and he said, yes, but, and I said, excuse me, sir, but remember, we are still a fighting nation.
Yeah.
And we have German prisoners in England.
Yes.
We know. And they tell us about the ill treatment that they were getting in England. I said, no. But that was the difference. The French were down. We were not. We were still fighting. And I used to use that time after time with the Germans. I said, don't forget, we are still fighting and we'll fight to the end. No matter what it is, we'll fight to the end. We are not the French. Our people are free people and we continue fighting. And that used to get me a good name with the Germans, because the Germans, they can see that point.
When did mail start coming through to you?
Oh, a long, long time after.
After this camp that we're talking about?
Oh, why? Yes, I would.
So one of the great...
I would think after that it would be easier 12 months before we got mail through.
So that itself would be a great concern to the men.
See, no mail. Wait. They didn't know where to write. They didn't know where you were. My wife didn't know anything about me for 6 months. Then they got word that I was a prisoner of war. Well, this happened to a lot of people, see? As far as my wife was concerned, I could be dead. I definitely out of touch. And nobody knew where we were until eventually they started coming through to Poland. Letters. I've got my first letter in that drawer from my wife.
When did the Red Cross arrive?
Red Cross? I would say it was 12 months. And when it arrived in bulk. Of course, we didn't know much about this. And we got an SEO, a bulk SEO. So you got a couple of tins of jam, a tin of sardines. Right? And the Germans opened it and put it in their bowl. And, you know, there you are. We said, well, hold on. The one set aside were punctured in the tin. They opened the tins and emptied them into this bowl. Nevertheless, there was something to eat. And then we started to get little bits of things like socks. An interesting thing about socks, this is way back, away from this camp, I do. We've gone away from here, there.
We'll finish this, yes.
12 months later. And among the socks, there was one chap says, oh, there was intestine. So he wrote to the lady who made the socks, he sent her a letter. He only had two letters a month or something like that. And he got a reply. She was very pleased that he liked the socks, but she hadn't knitted them for a prisoner of war. She knitted them for a soldier. So you see, this is being my point. Don't be sorry for yourselves. You see? Just hope that everything works out right. And I believe that because of where I had worked in the pits and the way I had been abroad and all that, I had a different outlook on life, and I treated everybody the same. Didn't matter what his rank was, I treated him the same. And I told the fellas, behave yourself. Don't do daft things. Fun, yes. Fun's fun. But don't do daft things. See, some chaps would walk over a tripwire. It's a known fact, if you step over that wire, he can shoot you, or he can shoot at you. And the Germans didn't say you will be shot at. They said, you will be shot. Right? Men did silly little things. But me, with my wisdom, and my sergeant, Jack Tingle, we managed everything shopping. And, of course, we kept a lot of those men with us when we travelled to other camps. But that was the beginning. And at the time, apparently, I was one of the nastiest-looking men that the Scotsman ever saw, with my red beard and my red tash. And I used to brush it away, you know. Right? And of course,
were you beginning to entertain yourselves? I know you've mentioned the fact that Germans let you run a little bit, but in other ways, what other ways did you find?
No, we had no means of entertainment. No, like that. No.
But these were the days when even the Germans weren't prepared for so many prisoners.
I mean, we were strange to them. See, a camp, prisoner of war camp, where there's only one mesh right where you're old. As I say, a chap walked out of it.
Do you remember any serious problems at this camp that you had to deal with?
No. Outside of that broken and escaped. And the bread. Yeah, there were serious problems. But no, I didn't have any trouble. No necessary trouble. The men couldn't understand why you had to carry a lamp with you when you went to the toilet, to the bog. Through the night, yes. Armour the job said, yes, but carry through the day too. He said, then the sentry knows that you're going to the bog. Right? I suppose there was sense in it.
What time was reveille?
Reveille? About 6 o'clock.
And what happened to you then when you woke up?
Well, when you woke up, if there was anywhere to wash, you had to wash. If you had anything to wash with, you went to the toilet, you went under the bark, see, because there would be a roll call about 7. That's when the whole camp would parade. If you had a little bit of bread left from yesterday, get it. Go and get your coffee, your liter of coffee, and if you had any bread left, you could have some to eat. Majority, of course, no, you didn't have any.
Did they issue you with any soap? So that you could wash?
Eventually they did offer issue Zypha soap, a lovely smell. And it was just fit in the palm of your hand. But you couldn't get a ladder with it. It was like a scoring stone, you know. You couldn't really, but the fact that you could use it, and that's you got that lasted for months and months. very sad they'd get an issue. The Germans didn't have a method whereby they issued anything at a regular period like you would expect them to. It seemed as though you got it if it was available, and if it wasn't, well, you did without.
What were the washing facilities in this
None.
Camp?
None.
You didn't have a bowl or anything of that to get water to you?
No. No. We had a mug, but we didn't have a bowl. So what you did, you went to that pump that I was talking about, and you pumped, and you tried to wash yourself under the pump. So eventually, I suppose, we would get buckets and so forth as we got settled in, but in the beginning, it was definitely primitive.
The roll call yourself, I think you said you counted in fives.
Five. Everybody stands in fives in the German army. So you go on roll call, and you all stand in fives, because the Germans count in fives. So there would be two Germans, there's a commandant and his staff, wanting the numbers on parade, and the Germans on duty would go two each company, one in front and one behind. And the chap in front would look at the one behind again, boom, there's five stand there, yeah. 10, yeah. 15, yeah. 20, yeah. In other words, he's confirming that there is five men standing there. And it's very simple. And each man, each counter, wanted to be the first to get back to the commandant. So, when the lads got to know the game, you would find that some would bend down. Some would sit on the hungers. And they went, boom, 9, 4. No, it's not 5, it's only 4. There he is there. The men did this deliberately. In the beginning, it was very simple. Everybody just seemed to do what they should do. Later, as you got to more sophisticated camps, it was different. But in this instance, I never had any trouble. I never had any necessity outside the bread and outside that lad who walked away up the camp, the dumbbell. But with the men and the Germans, no. The Germans could never believe that anybody would do that to a man, one of their comrades, throw him in there. But they ran when he got out of there. They ran as fast as we could run. In other words, the lad wanted a shirt among everybody.
Boredom, was that a problem?
You know, no. You couldn't be bored. Your mind is too... food, you're thinking about food. You want something to eat. If we get something to eat. You see, men were smoking leaves off the trees. Brown paper. And smoking leaves off the trees, see? Somehow, your mind was always on something. Even if you were just watching mice or wasps, cannibals, wasps. See a wasp, they fly apart. See? There was always something to do. For instance, like in the army when they used to have these, out in the east, when they used to get these buzz. They used to fly from tree to tree. They didn't fly, they just swooped. See? Well, you got the same kind of thing in Poland. And the lads suddenly discovered that, I tell you what, they could have a good game of cricket here. So they got themselves bits of wood, and they saw these things coming, woof, right? They did all kinds and all manner of things to occupy themselves, but I don't think anybody ever got bored. The thought of food was always on your mind. And with being in the country, as I say in the beginning, I suppose that encouraged the men to think, if I could only get out there, get there. But no, I never had any bother in that camp.
What about the health of the camp?
The health of the camp was remarkable, insomuch that there was no health facilities. Dr. Lucas was not for the prisoners of war, he was for the German troops. There was no facilities, there was no little hospital or nothing like that. If a man was sick, he just was sick. And of course, everybody had diarrhea, and everybody suffered dysentery through the conditions. And I suppose it was really hardened. I never suffered a thing. Diarrhea, yes. Jack Tingle, no. There were certain men who just seemed to take it in their stride. The more they got, the more they hardened. Others seemed to wilt away, and they're the people you had to encourage. But I would say that the men themselves more or less found their own companionship among themselves, you know. And if there was maybe 20 men sleeping in a sheep pen, well, of course, they had to behave themselves for their own comfort. There was no comfort, but for their own decency.
Did you set to try and improve the camp yourselves in any little way
yes.
that you could?
One of the first things you did when you went any camp, and there were some good camps, but we just tried to improve them. A camp like that Sommerlager, what we could do was clean the sties out. What we could do was more or less make the box, as we call them, at the latrines, we could make them more secure. There was lots of little things we could do to help to clean the place up. The Germans appreciated that, and the men themselves did it for their own benefit. In the races, when the men couldn't run, they were 2 weeks to run, but the Germans just encouraged them, see? And a bit of sausage, a bit of sausage, and the men used to run for it. Other than that, Sommerlager was a nice camp, strange camp, a new to us, a new environment, and the Germans didn't really know how to handle us.
How long were you there?
I would think we'd be there about 6 months.
And where did you go to then?
From there we went down to that to Bartigau, the camp I told you about.
Which one was that? Which camp was that?
We were in Sommerlager, and about a mile away there was another camp called Bartelager. Now, Bartelager was a hooded camp. It was built for Hitler youths. So everything
was... This is the place where you got your baths.
Yes.
You visited
yes.
for a bath.
We went down there for the bath, that's right. Well, later on, as the winter came in, they moved us from the sheep pens down there. And there we went into huts, and everything was perfectly organized. And that's the first place that I ever saw a jet car, toy car. Where the men, when they speak about the foreigners being able to develop something under stress, they'll never be the British. The huts that we went to had a long corridor and had rooms on the side. And that long corridor, throughout the night, you'd hear a door clash, a whistle blow, and a voice saying, "Mind the doors, please," and then a door clash. You think you're in a railway station, is it? That kind of thing. And one day I said, "What's that?" He went, it was a little car made from cardboard, a tin, and it shot by us, jet driven, jet propelled. Where did they get that from? Where did they get the power? Because we had no contact with Poles or anything. That is where the men made smoky jewels. A smoky jewel was a tin. If you could get a tin about the size of a treacle tin, you make a lovely smoky jewel. You used to take the lid off, you used to cut the bottom, and put the bottom on a swivel. And you put holes in the side of the tin. And any pieces of paper, bits of twig and that, you can put in there, you're going to boil the kettle on it. The Germans were so taken up with these smoky jewels that they actually put them on show in shops and said, "Be like the Englishman. Make the best of a bad job." And these little tins, there were so many things that the lads didn't invent, but they thought them out, including that jet car. And I never knew yet how they managed it.